you a high performer, obsessed with growth, and looking for an edge? Welcome to Mind Body Peak Performance. Together, we'll discover underground secrets to unlocking the full potential of your mind, body, and spirit. We'll learn from some of the world's leading minds, from ancient wisdom to cutting-edge tools and everything in between. This is your host, Nick Urban. Enjoy the episode. Welcome back to the show. This is episode 4, and going forward, new episodes will come out on a weekly basis. In this one, I got Angela Meppam on the show. Angela has spent over a decade researching how to cultivate energy to create massive impact in people's lives. From business to innovation, from relationships to well-being, energy fuels excellence. Angela is a professional speaker, educator, coach, consultant, and the founder of Whole Heart Being. She is also a voracious reader, something we share in common. Part-time bibliotherapist, amateur fantasy baseball manager, and wildly passionate treasure hunter. Today, we cover things like why energy management is vital to thriving, a quick energy building hack that requires no gear, the problem with energy boosters and constantly adding more, where to focus for dramatic energy increases, one of the body's fuel gauges that you may not know exists, how to overcome decision fatigue, and finally, understanding what is bioenergetics. If you're looking for counterintuitive ways to increase your energy, this is the episode for you. All right. Are you ready? Let's go. I'm here today with energy expert Angela Meppam. Angela, what have you done so far today to increase your energy?
Oh, great question. Every day, depending on what's coming up in the day, is how I will decide what I might need to add or do for energy optimization. Every morning, I take a B vitamin as soon as I get up. If I haven't slept fantastically, I might also take some turmeric. Helps with inflammation, just like really sets you back if you haven't had a great sleep. So a couple of those today, even though I had a great sleep, had some of that anyway. Fasting's massive for me. I intermittent fast anyway, but today, knowing like that I have something coming up that I really want to be focused for energy wise, I would definitely eat less, especially right beforehand, because digestion takes so much energy away from the brain. So wanting brain clarity, I've fasted for, I've only eaten one meal today at around lunchtime. So feeling really good, had a little bit of caffeine later in the day, you know, ready for just being pumped and ready for the podcast. Have to admit, I did have an Easter egg right before this as well, because a little bit of sugar at the right time is never a bad thing.
Strategic.
Absolutely. I've been for a walk today. Always gets my head in the right place. Getting out in the sunshine and just getting the nature vibes, absolutely key. Every day I try and do that. And meditation. So I've had a meditation visualization beforehand. Yeah.
How did you settle on each of those habits and products and supplements?
It's been years in the making, you know, starting off from not having any energy and being incredibly unwell is what led me down the energy path. Being in an environment where I was giving energy constantly every day, always saying yes to whatever was coming up and just giving more of myself than I had, I was constantly putting energy out there and I was not putting it back in. It wasn't filling the well. So that got to a point where I was getting increasingly ill and unwell in different ways, you know, chronic fatigue and arthritis and just insomnia, not sleeping, until it got to a point where I couldn't move anymore. I was in the hospital. I couldn't do anything. And I was just like, oh my goodness, like something has to change. What is happening? And just on my journey to wellness, to figure out what happened, you know, it's been years. It's been a long journey. Every year is a new step up the ladder. And honestly, I feel 10 years younger now, 10 years later, than I did at the time. It's unbelievable what it can do to you when you start to learn energy management. So yeah, it's a never-ending journey for me, experimenting, researching, learning, absolutely.
In one of our previous conversations, we discovered some mutual interests. I'd love to hear how you define holistic well-being, energy optimization, emotions, healing, and whole heart being.
Yeah, so my company is called Whole Heart Being, which came out of all of this learning and just wanting to share with everybody that's possibly heading towards energy exhaustion, or hopefully catching people before they reach that point, helping them to become whole. And the words whole, the words health, holy, healing, holistic, they all come from the same root word, the old English word hal. To be healthy is to be whole. And when we look at things as we do in the scientific realm, it's very compartmentalized. You know, we're breaking things down into different parts. And it's very, we're starting to get back into the holistic idea of things. But we are one system. We are whole. To be healthy, you need to be whole. So we need to look at every part of the system, because every single little thing affects the others. You know, it's a circular effect. So if I'm losing energy in one area, even though I might be really looking after myself in another one, then it's going to affect it massively. Same with the opposite. If I go into one area and I fix my energy in that area, it's going to have an impact, a positive impact on the other areas as well. So whole heart being is about holistic health. It's about looking at every part of your life and how you can optimize your energy and your joy and your well-being. By looking at all the parts and putting them together. We're not just looking at one part at a time.
I started studying the ancient science of Ayurveda, and 5,000 years ago, they saw a connection between the gut and the brain. And only now is modern science validating. Yeah, they're correct. There's an intricate link there. Was there any light bulb moment for you where you noticed somehow these two things that don't seem related actually are?
Absolutely. Because a big part of when I got really, really sick was to do with the gut and digestion. And so once I started learning about mind-body medicine, reading like Quantum Healing by Deepak Chopra and Biology of Belief, Bruce Lipton, and, learning about all that amazing stuff and then getting into, like you said, some of the ancient wisdom, they knew these things, so long ago. And you start to read those things and you go, yes, there's definitely a connection here. And then when you start to work on mindfulness, work on meditating and just connecting with the energies that are everywhere, because everything is energy, amazing things happen. You really start to see that there is a huge connection when you get your mind sorted and when you can bring your mind down into your body. I think I told you last time we spoke that I haven't been sick for years now. And I was so unwell for so many years without really even realizing that was abnormal. you sort of have little lingering things all the time and you just feel like, I just think if you don't know any better, you think that's just how life is, until it reached the point where I couldn't do anything, but there was no answers in the medical, in the scientific world. That's when I started looking into, there has to be something else, because I was going to different doctors, specialists, hospitals, and every test came back, you're fine. And I'm like, I'm not fine. I'm so unwell. I lost over 20 pounds. I was like, people were worried I was going to die. I was terrifying. It was a terrifying time. And I was like, there's got to be more to this. So once I started diving into the mind body medicine stuff, I couldn't believe the changes that started happening, just tuning in and learning that, yeah, you can have a massive impact on your health if you work on all the other parts as well.
Yeah. In my own journey, I experienced a bit of the same thing where the blood test came back clear and I didn't understand how it was possible because I felt terrible. And in a way, it's what pushed me into looking outside the box for other ways to improve.
Mm-hmm. And it's like, it's a funny thing because, there's the whole idea that it's psychosomatic. And for sure it is, because they're connected. We are creating those illnesses in our own bodies from the things we're not paying attention to at the time until we become aware of them, whether it's our thoughts or our emotions that we're pushing aside and allowing to drain so much of our energy. you know, they're impacting our health in such massive ways. And we're not taught these things. You know, we're not taught them at school. So until you're in a place where you're just like, what is happening to me? And you're willing to look outside of the box, I guess, for answers. Once you've seen that they work, it's funny because there's so many people that still are very skeptical about, you know, these different ideas, like, oh, you know, it's not science. There's no science really to back it up yet. And it's kind of like, there are so many people that have had such a massive impact and have changed their entire lives around by working on it that, there's something there. There's definitely, definitely something there. Like you said, the ancient wisdom texts from thousands of years ago, they all allude to these things that we're just coming back to, like the breath and the mind-body connection and, you know, being able to affect everything with our consciousness. They knew all the things that we are only now coming back around to.
As I like to say it, you can either wait 30 years for the medical research to catch up, or you can look around at all the people getting tremendous results around you. And if it's safe, you can try it yourself, do your own N=1 guinea pig experiment and figure out if it works.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, for me, I'm a voracious reader and I know you are too. And there's just so much you can learn because books are, you know, looking at all the different areas and experimentation. You know, like we're experimenters, both of us, we're both researchers. So we know that there's, you know, we're happy to look in any area and in any place. We're not going to dismiss anything until we've tried it ourselves. And then if you get a positive impact and you help others with that same positive impact, it's like, there's something here. I'm absolutely going to use this. I don't need to have someone say that I haven't seen it through my microscope. You know, my test results don't show. I'm like, I've got real proof, real life proof here in front of me. So, you know, you use what works and it will catch up eventually. I mean, it is every year. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's amazing. And I really applaud the scientists that are, you know, stepping outside of the norm and actually speaking out about these things. And they're really ostracized or have been in the past. Less so more and more now, but yeah, they can almost be excommunicated from the old boys club, you know, when they they go out and say the wrong thing and to have the courage to carry on with it and just be like, this, no, I have to share this, you know. I think that's really courageous and I really, really applaud that.
I'm with you. And if you think about what the most successful scientists have dealt with, when you go into the field, you're either recognizing that that's part of the cost, that if you come up with something really revolutionary that goes against the grain, you're going to be ostracized. It's not going to be accepted for who knows how long. And if you don't want that and you go into the field, where's the novelty, the excitement in following the herd?
Absolutely. There's no innovation if we're not willing to take those risks. And, you know, it's a funny thing. I was talking to someone recently about the fact that everybody that we revere now, you know, we say be more like this, they're all the innovators that at the time were ostracized. But now we teach that these are the people to look up to, these are our heroes, but yet we're teaching kids not to be like this at the same time. We're saying these are the people we look up to, but follow the line, don't do this, you know. So it's like it's a funny thing. But you know, that's why I think, you know, the people that have the courage to step out and do those things, fantastic.
Since the pandemic began, one of the biggest buzzwords in like the health and wellness space has been energy. I don't know if it's people sitting around more, having more free time because they're not commuting, what it is, but that's been something that I've seen come up over and over again, and especially more recently. Mm-hmm. And as I was going through your LinkedIn profile, I have to admit that you have probably the coolest title I've come across. Walk us through what an energy optimization specialist does.
Yeah. So energy is the fuel of excellence. You know, if you want to succeed in any area of your life, whether it's personal, professional, arts, you know, creativity, sporting, relationships, you need energy. You know, your success is a direct result of the energy that you put into it. And you can't put energy into it if you don't have it in the first place. So as an energy optimization specialist, looking at holistic well-being, I help people to look at every area of their life to maximize their energy systems and management. So we all know the top things that are going to help us with our energy. We all know the things, we all know we need to get good sleep and we should be eating right and exercising and, you know, those kinds of things. We know about them. Some people are optimizing them. Some people are really keeping on top of what's you know, current and following those things. There's a lot of things we don't look at as much when we're talking energy. So I'm looking at the holistic areas, like every part of your life where there is going to be energy drains, energy loss, energy blocks and resistance, and where we can also, you know, add things that we haven't even thought about adding necessarily for ourselves. So, you know, there's the foundational things, like we said, like sleep and food and exercise. And then breath is something that is one of the biggest things I think that we can do to help our health that is becoming a lot more massive now, which is why, again, I'm so grateful for people like James Nestor who are, you know, bringing that research into the common parlance now. So we're talking about breath so much more now. And again, it's from the ancient wisdom traditions. They knew thousands of years ago. We have to look at our breath and manage our breath. So there's the foundationals. And then there's so many other things. You know, so we need to look at the next steps. We need to look at our systems. You know, we're looking at our habits and how, like, where are we draining our relationships, our environment, the technology we're using, how it impacts us negatively and positively. You know, and then we're moving on to the more esoteric things, looking at passion and purpose and alignment and values. And, you know, there are so many different things that affect our energy. So as an energy optimization specialist, like, I work with every person completely individually, looking full diagnostic, like, what is it in your life that you are missing? Or maybe we need to help you figure out where those strains and blockages are, or where we can add more energy. So one of the unique things about it is that we, some people have one nailed, or two or three, you know, they're working so hard on, I'm getting the right kind of sleep, I'm doing everything I can for my sleep, because I know it's important, I eat well, I fast, I'm, you know, I exercise every day, I'm doing all the right things. But something's missing. I don't have the energy I need to be as successful as I can be. Most people are like, what can I add? What can I add? But for me, I'm so into the drains. I'm like, well, before we add more, like, let's look at where is it going? Why don't you have it in the first place? If you're doing all those foundational things right, why don't you have enough energy? You know, like, let's fix the drains before we start filling it up again. And then we can add some more things and we can really fill that bucket. So
that's exactly what I was thinking of, a bucket. And the typical approach, myself included, is, okay, I need more energy, a little caffeine, some of these nootropics, additive solutions. But if there's holes in the bucket's still going to leak. The energy is still going to leak out. And finding, identifying, and, like, patching any of the drains, that bucket can fill up and increase energy beyond what the additives can do alone.
Absolutely. And I think so many people aren't even aware. And that's the big thing that I've found in coaching, is that people are surprised where their energy is going, where it is being drained. And sometimes there are some tweaks that can be so simple, you know, that people haven't even thought of, and that they've done something a certain way their whole life, you know, and I did that. And I think that's why we got to where we were. There were things that we didn't even think about, no one had taught us about, that we were doing that weren't optimal. When we have someone help to point things out that we don't notice ourselves, you know, you can have a massive advantage, you know, when you've got somebody helping you that knows where to look, you know. And I think for me, I look at everything in terms of energy. I can look at somebody, I can meet them for like 10 minutes and I pick up on things. And it's so hard not to share with everybody that I meet, like, hey, I'm noticing something here. But it's so powerful. And I love it. I love watching the transformation that happens when you're working to fix people's energy, especially the drains and blockages. You know, when you can release that and fix the changes, that transformation that can happen.
And what are some of those, like, atypical energy drains that you see amongst people who are doing the basics right? They're eating right, they're sleeping right, maybe they're fasting.
Yeah, I mean, there are definitely some common things that you can find. But again, it is really important to say that, you know, it's like anything, there's no one thing fits everybody or is going to be the fix, which is why it's so important to be looking at every individual person. But, you know, two of the biggest ones are thoughts and emotions. They're huge. The amount of energy that our brain uses in thinking, and the amount of time that we spend in the past and in the future, in our thoughts, and in decision fatigue. This is one of the biggest, biggest drainers that people don't think about. They just do what they've always done. And, you know, they have a busy day they've worked hard, they've used so much of their energy during the day working, and then they're like, oh, right, now I'm on my way home and I'm so hungry and I haven't really had time to eat, and now I have to figure out what I'm going to do for dinner. And they haven't got that organized if they don't have their energy systems right. You know, it's a super simple fix, but it's something a lot of people just carry on doing without thinking about it. Every time we have to make a decision, especially when we've been making decisions all day long, like there's a point where you can't really make an effective decision any longer. And that's usually why partners, couples, when they get home at night, argue, because they've used all their decision-making energy. You know, they've got no energy left. And then they're fighting over, what are we making dinner tonight? Who's going to go and pick it up? What's happening? Who's making what? And it's exhausting. Like the amount of energy, like I used to do that years ago. And now I think, oh God, I can't even... It's like systems are massive for fixing drains, because if you know what's coming up and you're, you know, it's front loading, because you have to put some energy in at the beginning of the week or in your planning to make this right. But once you get it sorted, it's incredible the amount of energy it gives you. If you plan your meals for the week and you do one grocery shop and you've got everything prepared, you know what's, you know, you come home and it's there. So either in the slow cooker, it's made, or you know what you're picking up. No decisions need to be made. Simple, quick, move on to the next thing. You know, you're not hungry and grumpy and just, you know, getting into those fights. It's such a simple thing, but decision fatigue comes from the thought process. You know, we're always up in here. You know, we don't have to be.
Yeah.
That's huge, honestly.
I've heard it described as willpower is like a gas tank. We all have different sized willpower tanks. And every time we make a decision, we chew up just a little bit of that willpower fuel. And by the end of the day, we're running low, running on empty. All of a sudden, these seemingly small decisions become bigger and bigger, and we make poor decisions. So something as simple as laying out what you're going to wear the night before, or as I do, I like to mix a bunch of different supplement powders, and I'll do that all on Sunday night. And then by Monday through Friday, I won't have to combine them all. It'll already be there. So I just take it and dump it into water. And it's that simple. Just one less decision I have to make.
And how much of a difference does something like that make in your life?
I don't think it makes any difference until I forget to do it. And then I go through the week and I have to do it every single time. And it frustrates me. And I notice a big difference.
And that task switching thing as well, it's a big part of it. So if we're not planned, we're not organized. And I used to be the worst planner. I used to rebel against it, like fiercely. I used to be like, you know, I love just doing what I want to do whenever I want to do it, and, you know, being open to possibility. And I never thought I would have been someone who was like, discipline equals freedom. But when you have those things in place, not only are you not getting decision fatigue, but you're also stopping the task switching energy drains. You know, every time we go from one thing to another, and we're like, oh, I have to stop and do this, and then I have to do this, and then I have to do this. We're draining so much energy doing that. And I just don't think people realize how much energy they drain. You know, when you look at things like deep focus and you're thinking about how do I get into flow and get the most work done that I can do optimally, we're not going from one thing to the next. We're focused on one thing for that 90-minute block or whatever it is that we set aside. And that's amazing, the energy we can put into that time. So that's another big drainer. It's the decision fatigue. It's the multitasking, switching back and forth, energy drains constantly. Then there's emotions. This is one of the biggest ones for health, really. Most people, I'm not going to go and make bold claims here. Everyone's going to believe something a little differently, but there is a lot of emerging science around the incredible impact of our emotions when we repress and suppress them. And how that impacts our health and well-being. And that's a massive thing that a lot of people don't think about, especially high performers. High performers, like, I don't have time for these emotions. And they just constantly push them aside, push them down. And it's not until they're stopped in their tracks that they have to deal with the emotional repercussions. So
that was exactly me up until 2 years ago. And I read Dr. Joe Dispenza's book, Becoming Supernatural. And then I found Bruce Lipton's Biology of Belief and realized all of a sudden that there's actual science behind this. And at the end of the day, if you get into an intense argument, you feel drained. And when I think about the energy drain of a big argument versus like physical exercise, I'd say it's comparable to the most strenuous of workouts.
Hugely, absolutely. And I think so much of the time, it's not only in that moment when we're caught up in the emotion, the energy of the emotion, it's the fact that an emotion comes up within us and we don't want to experience it. So we push it down, you know, we try and just like forget about it. And I know for myself, that was a big part of why I became so ill, is that I was having all these signals, because emotions are just signals. They're a huge part of our evolutionary well-being system. We get a signal, just like we're in the car and we're driving along and we get the beep because our fuel's running low. It's letting us know, hey, your fuel's running low. And it's same with if we have any kind of emotion, it's just pointing us in a direction that is trying to tell us something. You know, so if you're feeling fear or you're feeling anger or you're feeling depressed or you're feeling like just off, instead of just trying to ignore that and carrying on, because when we do that, we just push the energy of the emotion within us. It just gets trapped. We have to stop and notice. You know, we have to be like, what is this trying to tell us? It's here for a reason. Every part of our biological system works in an optimal way for our well-being if we pay attention to what it's trying to tell us. And our emotions are the signals. So if we ignore them, then it's, if we ignore the fuel signal in the car, you know, we're not going to get too far, right? We have to fill it out. And it's the same with our energy and our emotions. And I love the saying that emotions are energy in motion. That's what emotion is. And it's constantly moving through you in different ways to give you a different signal about what to do next. And when we ignore it, not only does it get trapped, but we're not paying attention to something we should be paying attention to, which is going to come and bite us further down the track as well.
So say an emotion comes up and I'm feeling anger and I suppress it because I'm very good at suppressing emotions. Where does that go into my body?
There are a lot of different energy practitioners that will give you different answers to that. So it's dependent on, I guess, where you like what you're learning from, like someone like Louise Hay, Heal Your Life. You know, she looks into this a lot about when you're unwell, like what energy, what body part is it that's unwell? And then it will give you a bit of an indication as to what are you missing? What indicator have you lost, you know, you're not paying attention to? And then there's some amazing healers now, like Eileen McCusick, who's someone I've come across recently, who works with the biofield. And she can notice where your energy is actually stuck by like looking at the energetic field around your body. And we are electrical beings. So again, scientifically, there's more and more scientists who are like, absolutely, there is a magnetic field, a bioenergy field around our bodies, because every electrical system has one. The earth has one, we have one. And there are people that are really great at getting in tune with that. And they can also notice, like, if you notice the energy blockages over here, what does that mean? What have I suppressed and different things like that? It's something that I'm doing a lot more learning around. I would love to learn more about with specific energies that we are blocking, you know, where are they going? How do they show up? You know, but yeah, looking at someone like Louise Hay, who has like every part of your body and sort of tells you about what it might have to do with, is super fascinating. You know, and obviously everyone can have a different idea around whether that's worth listening to or not. But Dr. Sue Morder, who wrote the Energy Codes, she has some really fantastic ways of talking about where or how the energy actually gets trapped in your body. So it causes inflammation. If you think about the chakras as energy systems, energy points, then if we are blocked in any way, then that's kind of getting a little bit out of focus. So where, like, if we feel like, you know, our heart's blocked or we're blocking power down lower or we're blocked spiritually, then it's going to have effects around that area of our body, you know, wherever it is that the chakra is aligned with. When you're saying like, is it in my, like, you know, my energetic field or is it in my physical body? It's affecting everything because it's signaling the cells. You know, like if you have energy and you're pushing inside, it's going to signal the cells like, I have to be alert. It's all connected.
Yeah, it's a hard concept to grasp initially, but I read a book called The Body Electric by Robert Becker, and it's a very comprehensive overview. And I find that the more you're exposed to work on energy, the easier it becomes to understand.
You know, and it's having conversations, especially with people that are like really high achievers and you know, especially in the professional world and the corporate world, sometimes it's very difficult for people to be open to listening to some of those ideas, even if they might be a little bit interested. Then people are often like wary of how other people are going to think about them if they start talking about their stuff or if they start going down that route, because they don't want to be seen as woo and, you know, like, oh, what am I talking about? But, you know, again, it's when you've done a lot of research or, you know, put it into practice for yourself, you can see the benefits. One of my favorite energy techniques is Wim Hof breathing. I mean, breath is everything, but Wim Hof breathing is something that you can do to release that blocked energy and emotion. It's one of the best ways. The first time, and this was back when I was beginning to heal, that I found out about Wim Hof and did Wim Hof breathing, I got about 5 breaths in and I was a puddle on the floor. Like, it opened up all these emotional channels because I had been repressing every emotion that was coming through. I was just, nope, ignoring it. I had so much emotion or energetic emotion trapped within me that as soon as I started doing that, I just sobbing. Like, people have such different responses depending on where they're at their stage in their life. Some people start laughing uncontrollably when they do Wim Hof for the first time. And some people, you know, just feel good. So it totally depends what's already trapped in your body, what's going on with you. For me, that was the biggest release of emotion I've ever had in my entire life. And I can't believe how much better I felt afterwards. Like, after I'd gone through that and let it happen, instead of trying to, I couldn't stop that. It was so powerful that I couldn't stop it. So I had to let it ride out. And I think my whole system was in shock and all, like, what just happened? I've never had that happen again doing Wim Hof. Now I just feel great when I Wim Hof. But that is something that you can do to release energy if you have trapped energy that's causing illness. It's a massive one. Mm.
It's been a couple weeks now. Haven't done any dedicated breath work. On the other end, when you are releasing emotions, energy is really high, what does that look or feel like?
I think when you're releasing, like if you're releasing trapped emotions, you feel a release, you feel lighter. There actually seems to be a weight to it. You know how people say like a weight was lifted off my chest when finally they got around to having that conversation or whatever it was they had to do. It feels physical because the weight, it's like potential energy, you know, it's like a spring that you've held down. Mm-hmm. And it's not until you actually let it go that you feel that weight lift. And it's amazing how physical that feels. So it's an instantly noticeable feeling, I would say, in your own physical system. And you usually get a pretty great sleep afterwards because you're exhausted. Like, it feels like the anti-energy thing at the time, but then the next day you'll wake up and feel way more rejuvenated because you've let that go. But now the energy can flow. So much of looking after our energy optimization and management is allowing it to flow properly, and emotions block our energy if we're going to hold them in. You know, it can't get around that resistance, that blockage easily. So until we let it go and everything can flow, then we start to get more energy for everything we want to do in the day. A lot of the time I have found mindset, thinking and emotions are two of the biggest things that people are missing, ignoring, neglecting in their energy management. And when they fix those, transformation can be huge.
What are some of the biggest myths, misconceptions, or worst recommendations that you often hear around energy?
In this day and age, it's the myth of more. You know, and we kind of touched on that a little bit earlier. We're always looking for that quick fix. You know, we're like, we all want more energy because we know that energy is the fuel of excellence. We know that we can only do things well if we have the energy to do so. So we're always like, what can I add? And like, the energy drink caffeine industry it's billions of dollars. The amount of money spent every day, probably in the US and Canada, on, you know, caffeine and energy drinks, you know, and Coca-Cola and Pepsi and all those things, the caffeinated drinks, like, you know, and now supplements and smart drugs and all the different things that you can take. Like, people are looking for that quick fix. You know, they're always looking for a boost in energy. it's always, what can I add? You know, it's more. Whereas for me, I'm like, it's so much more important to look at what can I take away.
I was scrolling through Amazon and I saw an upcoming book that's called actually that it's called Subtract, and it touches on the whole idea of minimalism and subtracting, and paradoxically how subtracting can add energy. What's your take on that?
Oh, I absolutely agree. Absolutely. People talk about mindfulness so much now. That's another buzzword, right? Mindfulness. And until you actually think about why it is that mindfulness is so powerful, we're going to less, we're doing less, we're thinking less, we're stopping for mindfulness. So much of it is because our brain uses so much of our physical energy. And so much of that is in rumination and worry and anxiety and stress. Like, we're literally fueling our brain so that we can think about things that are only going to make us feel worse and drain more energy. It's a crazy thing. And so mindfulness, which is coming back to, again, that minimalist idea that doing less is bringing us from our mind down into our body so we notice what's happening around us. We're in the present moment. You know, and it doesn't have to be woo thinking about mindfulness. You know, what it is we're stopping the crazy energy rush of thinking about everything that's happened in the past. I heard a great quote about, it might have been Joe Dispenza, I can't remember who shared it, but it was about when we've seen a bad movie, we never go back and watch it again. But we constantly go back to the bad things that have happened in our lives and replay that movie over and over again. And what are we benefiting from by doing that, except for draining ourselves of energy, because we're just pumping that energy into the brain to work over this thing, which is getting us all worked up and draining more energy. We can learn to be mindful and be in the moment and just show gratitude for what's going on around us and actually pay attention. Less is more. You are saving so much energy. It's unbelievable. And I think that's where mindfulness works. It's not just that whole idea of, I'm just going to be here in the now. And it's powerful, really powerful.
Yeah. And the tragedy of dwelling on the negative thoughts and experiences is that the more we do it, the more ingrained those same neural pathways become, the easier it becomes to think it again. And it becomes a vicious cycle that repeats over and over again.
Absolutely. So true. You know, and then that's where the neuroplasticity comes in, right? We want to be thinking in new ways. We don't want to be creating those pathways. I read a crazy piece of research the other day about Alzheimer's and how when you're constantly in that rumination of thinking the same thoughts over and over again, you know, being judgmental and just playing those same pathways over, you're actually helping to solidify, you know, the, I think it's the plaque for Alzheimer's, you know, and it's like, that's what's happening. You're literally making them so strong and that they're inflexible. And like, if you learn, because they used to think that Alzheimer's was irreversible, but they're starting to see that there are some ways that if you are focusing on the new and different ways of thinking, that you can actually use neuroplasticity to actually start to undo some of that too. So, it's amazing. It's amazing what your brain can do. Thoughts are huge, and we underestimate the energy they use and where they take us.
For folks that are interested in the lifestyle energy audit that you've mentioned, how do they go about identifying these blocks, resistance, drains? Do you have offerings for them?
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, obviously, if you're trying to think about it on your own too, like self-awareness is key. People can even just from hearing some of this start to think, wow, maybe that's me, you know, maybe I'm putting too much into that. But like my absolute passion in life is to help people with their energy. And so I have a couple of different ways that I work with people with my energy optimization. So like my signature program is one-on-one. I usually work with clients between 4 and 6 months, but again, it's totally individual depending on who I'm working with. And we definitely do a deep diagnostic first and have a look at how can we work together? What's the best way to make this happen? And have a look at what are the systems that you are strong in already and maybe just need a little bit of extra help with, and then what are also the things that you're maybe missing. One-on-one is the way that I love to work best, but I do also have a 90-day energy program, which is one of my favorite ways of working as well. So it's kind of 12 weeks. You get go work through the 12 principles of energy, which are in my upcoming book, which I am currently writing now. So we work through one a week. yeah, I'm really in depth, and it's kind of like modules and different things like that. But we again do a lot of one-on-one in there as well and tailor it to each individual. So doing a diagnostic beforehand, if you're wanting to jump into the 90-day energy program, if you already feel like you're really strong in, let's say, diet or sleep, then we might squash like three of the principles into 2 weeks so that we can spend 2 weeks on one principle that you're like looking like you need a lot more help with and support with. So massive energy transformation in the 90-day energy program. So it's limited. For that there, it's coming, the next one's coming around in June, towards the end of June. So anyone who's interested in either of the programs, just come to my website, wholeheartbeing.com. It's got a little bit more about each of the programs on there. And yeah, you can jump in and ask any questions and let me know that you're interested, and we'll jump on and have a conversation and just see how we can best work with you. And I also work with groups, whether it's like just corporate groups or jumping on, like especially now because there's so much online stuff happening. So just jumping in a group that's just super interested in optimizing their energy and just being the best that they can be and reaching their highest potential.
I'm looking forward to checking it out. I think I have my energy pretty well handled, but it always helps getting a second pair of eyes on my lifestyle and illuminating any blind spots I might have.
Absolutely. And I think that's key what you said, they're blind spots, because, you know, another thing saying that I absolutely love is you can't see the label when you're inside the jar. You know, so there's so many times that we're caught in our own little world and we don't notice, but someone else can come along and just be like, I can see that straight away.
Angela, I want to be respectful of your time, but I have a final question for you. Imagine that there's a worldwide burning of the books, so to speak. All information, knowledge, content, it's all gone, but you get to save three pieces of content. What would you choose?
One of the projects that I'm working on right now too is a collaboration for an online bookstore and book club. And, you know, like I live around books. I do bibliotherapy as well, which is working around healing through books. So I'm a huge proponent of of the amazing information that is in books and that people can share with us in podcasts and things like that. And I kind of freaked out at that idea when you said that. I was like, oh my God, can you imagine? So my first thought, and I'm going to give you two thoughts. My first thought is, if that actually were to happen, if everything was to be burned down, I would probably keep the ancient texts like you were talking about. You know, I would go back and keep things like the Buddhist teachings and the Vedas and, you know, the Upanishads and those, because there's so much wealth of information in there that we can draw from and that we're drawing from every day now. But to jump into the now and just to think about some of the people that have influenced me lately, which if people have been listening here and they're interested in the more, the different types of energy management that you can look at as opposed to the main ones like sleep and exercise and that kind of thing. I would, Dr. David R. Hawkins, who wrote Letting Go and Power vs. Force, he really dives into the emotional side of things and how that connects with consciousness. And he looks at the maps of consciousness. So looking at like where we are in our life on the levels of emotion, you know, from down in apathy and despair and things like that, up all the way up into love and peace and serenity. His work's incredible. It's blown my mind in the last couple of years reading his work. So I would definitely recommend David R. Hawkins for anyone interested in learning more about the emotions, which we've talked quite a lot about today. Andrew Huberman, who is my latest podcast obsession.
Me too. I just found his podcast a couple of weeks ago and subscribed.
You know, I mean, there's so many people out there that are doing, you know, a lot of the experimentation with biohacking and all that kind of stuff. I mean, you know, you've got Greenfield and, you know, Asprey and Tim Ferriss, and there's all these people doing all this stuff. So it's so many people to look at, but Huberman, being a neuroscientist, he just shares so many interesting biological systems that make a massive difference to your energy. And like I'm learning so much just from listening to his podcast, and it's sending me in lots of different directions and going down lots of different rabbit holes. So definitely I would be keeping his podcast as part of it. Yeah. And thirdly, like, I think I would go back to Csikszentmihalyi and flow and the evolving self and creativity. Like, he's like the father of flow, and flow is like the peak of the energy pyramid. I would put him in there, absolutely. He's a huge influence on a lot of what I've read and learned and want to dive more into.
Is he the one that wrote about the different triggers of flow state?
He coined flow state. So he is the father of it. He had the first definition of flow, which most people still use, and you know, is slowly evolving a little bit as we learn more about it. You know, Stephen Kotler is somebody now who has the Flow Research Center, which I, you know, I love following his work as well. He has a book out lately, Art of Impossible, which has been really interesting to learn about as well. and if you haven't read Flow, I think absolutely it's a book to read.
Well, Angela, this has been fun talking. Where can people go aside from wholeheartbeing.com to find out what you're working on?
Yeah, absolutely. So wholeheartbeing.com is the first place. Come find me on LinkedIn as well. If you're interested in the book side of things, you can come and find me on Instagram at wholeheartbeingbooks, where I'm sharing the latest books that I'm reading and what I'm looking forward to reading and lots more energy optimization stuff coming onto there as well. So,
yeah, if you have books in your handle, that last question must be especially hard.
So you gave me anxiety thinking about that. I was like, please, no. No, let's not burn the books. Awesome. Well, this has been so much fun talking about energy optimization. It's my favorite thing to talk about.
Yeah, we'll have to do a round two about flow and after we both read that book and reconvene.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you for tuning in to this episode. Head over to Apple Music, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts and leave a rating. Every review helps me bring you thought-provoking guests. As always, you can find the show notes for this one at mindbodypeak.com/episode. There, you can also chat with other peak performers or connect with me directly. The information depicted in this podcast is for information purposes only. Please consult your primary healthcare professional before making any lifestyle changes.